Hello and welcome to Perspective on the Bible. I'm Pastor Fred and we'll be looking at the book of Luke, Mary's story. And the uniqueness of this story is that in the Bible we have a personal interview by St. Luke of Mary. And it's recorded for us in the book of Luke in the first two chapters. Luke has spoken to us as one who is intimate with the Christian faith and intimate with the Christian disciples. And he is one who is knowledgeable about this faith, although not himself an apostle. And although he is the writer of the third gospel and the book of Acts, he is not himself one of the chosen 12. So when Luke begins to write his gospel, he tells us that he is going to take a lot of effort to make sure that this book, O Theophilus, or O Believer, is written accurately, carefully, with corroboration of eyewitnesses, making sure that he handles the truth scrupulously and carefully investigates every avenue and every source of information. He's going to say that he's going to do a comprehensive study, investigating everything carefully from the beginning. And he's going to try to be inclusive, all that Jesus began to do, of what was spoken to him. And one of the sources that Luke uses was very much alive in that day, which is Mary, the mother of Jesus. And so, for those of you who would like to get close to Jesus, I do not think there is any place where you can get any closer to Jesus than in the Gospel of Luke. Because in this Gospel, and I would suggest to you, it permeates the entire gospel, not just the first two chapters, because Luke uses a phrase, which we will talk about in a little bit, which he uses repeatedly throughout the gospel concerning Mary, the mother of Jesus. And who better to know Jesus than his mother? Now, let's have a little pause here just for the beginning of our program, and we'll talk about the actual story in just a moment. Stay with us. Stay with us. Pastor Fred, and welcome back to Perspectives on the Bible. Today we're getting ready for looking to the book of Luke. And who was this Luke? We might ask the question. Well, Luke is designated in the Bible as, and well known in tradition, as being the beloved disciple. And if we were to look in the Holy Scripture, if you have your Bible with you, you can look in the book of Colossians, which is an epistle of Paul during his first imprisonment, and when he is in Rome during his first imprisonment. Paul had two imprisonments, and he writes to the Colossians concerning many of the people whom he knew, and I don't want to get too involved in all of the details, because Colossians all by itself is an individual study, which you can look at, but if you read the book of Colossians, which is only a few, like 4 pages long, you'll get the impression of a man who knows many other people, a man who has involved Paul with other people, a man who has many friends in many places, and who has traveled extensively, and in each one of those places he has made a friend. And in the fourth chapter of his letter to the Colossians, which he writes from prison, Paul talks about many of his friends there. He talks about Tychicus. He talks about Onesimus. He talks about Barnabas and Mark and Aristarchus. He talks about Epaphras. And then in the 14th verse, he talks about Luke, the beloved physician, sends you his greeting. So that Luke, the beloved physician, either visited Paul and had departed, or was remaining with Paul in Rome during Paul's first imprisonment. Luke, the beloved physician. Well, this is the same Luke who writes for us the Gospel of Luke. And in this Gospel, a Luke, a very educated man, don't forget, he's a physician. And physicians, even then, were very highly educated, very highly trained. They went through a rigorous course of study, a rigorous course of apprenticeship, much like they do today, much like they do today. And so Luke tells us, and I'm going to read us the first four verses of chapter 1, the first four verses of chapter 1 of the Gospel according to St. Luke. This is the third Gospel. Luke wrote two books, which both of them are included in the New Testament. Maybe someday we might find that he wrote three books, but at least we know he wrote two. And the third one, the first one is the third Gospel. The third Gospel is the Gospel of Luke, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And then we read also in the book of Acts, which is a follow-up to his book, Luke. Now, this is the longest of the Gospels, and he is a fellow worker with Paul. We read that in Philemon, verse 24, in the book of Philemon, verse 24, that he, Luke, was a fellow worker and companion with Paul. We also see that in Colossians chapter 4, verse 14. And let's get on then to what's going on here. I'm just going to read it to you. I know you can read it to yourself in your own scripture, but listen to the words. Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile an account of the things accomplished among us, just as those who, from the beginning, were eyewitnesses and servants of the word, have handed them down to us, it seemed fitting for me as well, having investigated everything carefully from the beginning, to write it out for you in consecutive order, most excellent Theophilus, so that you might know the exact truth about the things that you have been taught. Now, this is a magnificent introduction to Paul's entire work, and he lays out for us in a formal preface exactly how he went about writing this gospel. Now, as I've said, Luke is a Christian. He is a friend of St. Paul. He is a fellow traveler with St. Paul. He has been in ministry with St. Paul. He has been named the beloved physician in Colossians chapter 4, verse 14, and in Philemon chapter 24, Paul is seen as a companion and fellow worker with Paul. And now he tells us how he's going to go about doing business. He said the first thing he's going to do is that he's going to have eyewitnesses. Eyewitnesses. Just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and servants of the word, have handed them down to us. So Paul is an eyewitness to certain parts of the gospel, especially in the book of Acts, I should say, in the dual book in the book of Acts. Mary is, John, and other of the apostles are, but we have a unique experience here in the first two chapters of Luke. Now, what I would suggest to you is that when you read the first two chapters of Luke, you ask the question, if you are going to seek an eyewitness to the birth of Jesus, if you are going to seek an eyewitness to the announcing of the angel Gabriel to Mary of the birth of Jesus, if you were to seek an eyewitness to the birth of John the Baptist, or an eyewitness to the message to Zechariah concerning the John the Baptist, who might be alive in around 60 AD? Now, we're guessing that Jesus dies around 30 AD, 30 AD or 33 AD or 35 AD, whatever date you want to pick, maybe even 41 AD, depending on if you want to use the common era notations. Nonetheless, Jesus has been dead for at least 20 years, and many of the people associated with Jesus in the gospel accounts of his life are dead. And so, who would he turn to in order to interview and to find out information exactly from an eyewitness? Because Luke says, I'm going to be very fastidious here. He says, I'm going to seek out corroboration. There are many stories going around about Jesus. There are many gospels going around about Jesus. There are many writings of many writers in different parts of the world, all of them claiming to be true, all of them claiming to be factual. And already in the first 20 years after the life of Jesus, the church, the early Christians, have to sift through a huge amount of material, all of it supposing to be true and about Jesus. And so Luke says, well, I'm going to go to those who were from the beginning. That's verse 2 of chapter 1. Those who were from the beginning, eyewitnesses. Well, the beginning. When is the beginning? Well, the beginning is with the annunciation of the angel Gabriel to Mary concerning the birth of Jesus. And other eyewitnesses. Well, Zechariah and his wife Elizabeth and John the Baptist. What do we know about that? Well, we'll talk about that in a minute or so as we move on into the Gospel of Luke. But he goes to the eyewitnesses. And if you deal with the first two scripture passages here, chapter 1 and chapter 2 of Luke, you have to ask yourself the question again, who would have been an eyewitness to the events that are related to us in these first two chapters? And does Luke give us a clue as to whom he went to in order to find out the facts concerning the early time of Jesus' incarnation, of Jesus' birth, and of Jesus' childhood? And then we might ask the question later on about the childhood of Jesus, why Luke leaves out probably huge quantities of material from the narrative concerning the child Jesus. And we never will probably know the answer to that, but we will ask the question appropriately as we get to that point. So, he says, verse 2 of chapter 1 of Luke, just as those who were from the beginning, eyewitnesses and servants of the word, as they have handed them down to us. So isn't this a wonderful expression that Luke says he's going to go to those who are believers? He's not going to go to antagonists. He's not going to go to people who are anti-Christian. He's not going to ask those who are writing books against Christianity what their opinion is. He's going to those who are believers because he obviously understands that there is an inherent prejudice on the part of the antagonists of Christianity, and their writings are antagonistic to Christianity. Their witnesses and their testimony concerning Christianity is antagonistic to Christianity because it wants to destroy Christianity. And so Luke, quite properly, is not terribly interested in the evidence, so to speak, of those who do not want Christianity to flourish or even to survive. And so, he said, I have in front of me, and from my own experience with Paul and others, I have much information, I have much that has been handed down to us during these latter years, and now I will help you, O Theophilus. He said, O Theophilus, verse 3 of chapter 1 of Luke. Now, Theophilus can be, in fact, a person. There's Theodore and Frederick and John and all these other names. And so Theophilus, very, very similarly, could be the name of an individual human person. And it may even have been the benefactor who helped Luke relative to money, if you want to go that far. And I don't see any reason why you wouldn't. The church has always been very dependent upon wealthy benefactors who can give us the money to do what we have to do, and who, because of their faith in God and their belief in God, are willing to give the money. There's nothing wrong with wealth, only with cheapness, you know. Think of Ebenezer Scrooge as we deal with the gospel lessons, and think about all of the people you have known who have loved money more than people, and loved money even more than self. And so we have Luke talking to that, but it also could be that Theophilus is a symbol, because the word theos, philos, means lover of God. So if we were to translate the word Theophilus into English instead of transliterating it, now in this case we're taking it as the name of a person, but it could also be symbolically that even though there may have been a person named Theophilus, I'm sure there were in the past, through that representation, it is addressed to all Theophiluses, Theophili, you know, which is, I guess, the plural of Theophilus, which is lovers of God, all lovers of God. I thought it would be fitting to write it out for you in consecutive order, most excellent lovers of God, so that, in order that. I think in English, in verse 4, English is a great language, but I think we need a little bit of a tweaking here, a little bit. Verse 4, and throughout the entire Bible, we come to the words, so that. And in modern English, I would encourage you to stick in the words, in order that. Because it's the intention here is so that you may do, or you may know, so that you may do, so that you may know, so that you may believe, so that you may act. And so it's a little bit clearer, I would suggest to you, to say, in order that you may know, in order that you may do, in order that you may believe. That's the purpose. So verse 4, so that, or in order that, you may know the exact truth. Luke is extremely interested here in the exactness of what he is going to communicate. And why is that important? Well, in the early church, we have plenty of historical and literary evidence to the effect that there were multiple gospels, multiple epistles, multiple stories about Jesus. To use a modern colloquialism, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, every Mary, Jane, and Martha, were trying to write a book in order to get into the bestseller list and to, you know, that type of thing. Luke is surrounded in every way, and the whole Mediterranean basin and the whole Roman world of the time is, and the church of the time is flooded with enormous amounts of written material. Now, this is not all bad. We have the Shepherd of Hermas. We have many, many so-called gospels. We have many, many so-called epistles. Many, many things are being written and being circulated concerning the new faith, the new religion, the new revelation concerning this Jesus. It was like the latest and the greatest thing. However, some of it was spurious. Some of it was downright lies. Some of it was somewhat true, and some of it was just copied from other things with editing and subtraction and addition and all the like more. And it was very important for the early Christians to come to some kind of confidence that the things that they were reading and the things that were being written, the things that were being read in their churches, that these things, epistles, letters, gospels, stories about Jesus, were accurate and not just fairy tales or made-up stories, fables, and the like, or even downright lies. So they were very cautious about that. And this is also important in terms of the spread of the gospel, because people were very interested in Jesus. They were very interested in Christianity. They were very interested in what this new religion had to say or teach. And, you know, with all of this huge quantity of written material being spread out, throughout, and also anecdotal material and oral material and stories just getting around, sort of like an non-electronic internet just exploding with every kind of detail concerning Jesus. It was important for Luke to try to set the record straight. And he, among the apostles, don't forget, they were fishermen, they were tax collectors, they were ordinary folk. Most of the apostles and the early disciples of Jesus probably were not that literate. I'm sure they could speak multiple languages, but they might not be able to write multiple languages. I mean, we have plenty of evidence that Peter may have been able to speak English. I mean, I'm sorry, it may be able to, speak Arabic. He may have been able to speak Hebrew. He may even had a smattering of Greek and Latin, but he was not illiterate in terms of training, and more than likely anything from the hand of Peter is really done by a secretary, someone who was with him and listened to his words and wrote down what he had to say. And then Peter could hear it back. You know, the person who wrote down what Peter said could read it back to Peter, and Peter could make the appropriate changes, sort of like a dictation type of situation. And that did happen with Peter and maybe with the other apostles as well, of the original 12. But Paul was literate, most certainly, and a good writer, and Luke was literate, most certainly, and a good writer. And so we have these written Gospels, and that's the importance of them. Now, Luke is also very careful to have a comprehensive study. He says in verse 3, I have investigated everything carefully from the beginning. From the beginning. Now, this is complemented in Acts chapter 1, verse 1. This is complemented in Acts. This is the second book, Acts. Remember, Luke wrote two books, the book of Luke and the book of Acts. And he complements his introduction of Luke with an introduction in Acts where he says, all that Jesus began to do and teach. That is in Acts chapter 1. So Luke is saying, I have investigated everything available. I have spoken to everyone available. I have been mostly diligent in making sure that I have been scrupulous in the handling of the truth. And I have had a comprehensive study and investigated everything carefully, especially looking for the corroboration where it is available of those who were eyewitnesses of the things that have been reported and handed down among us, in order that you may know the truth of these things, O Theophilus. And so we have this wonderful expression of confidence in the factuality of what follows when we read the first four verses of the Gospel of Luke. Now, what I would like to suggest to you is that we look at verse 5 of the first chapter of Luke. In the days of Herod, the king of Judea, there was a certain priest named Zacharias of the division of Abijah, and he had a wife from the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth, and they were both, verse 6, and they were both righteous in the sight of God, walking blamelessly in all the commandments and requirements of the Lord. And, verse 7, they had no child because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both advanced in years. Now, this is most intimate detail, most exacting detail, something that would have to be coming from a written source. Maybe there was something rolling around about Zacharias in those days. But we do have to acknowledge that probably at this point, if Zacharias is the father of John the Baptist, and he's an old man, and his wife, Elizabeth, was the mother of John the Baptist, and she's an old woman, being advanced in years and barren, as he says, then if we're dealing with 30 years for the life of John the Baptist, or thereabouts, 28 years, or 30 years, 31 years, whatever you want to pick, and then 33 years for Jesus, and now it's, let's say, 60 A.D., and these people were old when John the Baptist was born, then more than likely they may have already been dead by the time John the Baptist did his work in the Jordan River 30 years after his birth. They may have long ago been dead. And If not, they most certainly were dead 30 years after that, a full 60 years from his birth. If they were old and advanced in age when he was conceived, then most certainly 60 years later, they were dead. So who would Luke have turned to? He couldn't talk to Zacharias. Zacharias was dead. He couldn't talk to Elizabeth. Elizabeth was dead. And he most certainly couldn't talk to John the Baptist. He was beheaded by Herod, as you know in the story. So there is no eyewitness. There is no corroboration. However, there is one. There is one, and he tells the story of that one, and her name is Mary. Mary was an intimate associate, a cousin of Elizabeth. She knew of Zacharias, Elizabeth's husband, who was a priest. And so Mary could give Luke the details concerning the events of the birth of John the Baptist. And since Luke has told us that he went to the eyewitnesses and interviewed them, examined them, investigated the tradition, and was scrupulous in the handling of the truth, and set it out in an orderly way, we can be pretty confident that the information, which is so exacting concerning Zacharias, comes from the mouth of Mary, the mother of Jesus. So that we know Herod was the king in those days. We know that the man who was John the Baptist's father was Zacharias. We knew that he was of the division of the priesthood, of the division of the priesthood of Abijah, so that Zacharias, the father of John the Baptist, was a priest of Israel, and he had a wife who was a daughter of Aaron. Now, she wouldn't be a priestess, but don't forget she's a daughter of Aaron. So she's of the house of Aaron, and she is, therefore, a priest mother. You know what I'm saying? Her children would be entitled to some kind of priestly status. So there was a priest married to a daughter of a priest. And you can imagine that that household would have been a relatively religious. Obviously, he was a practicing priest. She was a righteous daughter of a priest. And so in verse 6 it says, they were both righteous in the sight of God, walking blamelessly in all the commandments and requirements of the Lord. Isn't that wonderful? But they had no child because Elizabeth was barren and they were both advanced in years. And so this information could very well have come from Mary, the mother of Jesus. And I would suggest to you then that we are hearing and reading and experiencing the life of the early life and the unknown history of Jesus from the very lips of Mary, the mother of Jesus, interviewed by St. Luke. Let's just take a pause there. I'm going to play a little bit of our theme song, and then we'll be right back. Stay with us. Stay with us. This is Pastor Fred. We're back looking at the Gospel of St. Luke, the story of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And we've just concluded with the seventh verse of the opening lines of Luke's Gospel. We're going to continue this tomorrow, picking it up at the eighth verse. We're going to look at then the events that Mary, the mother of Jesus, tells us occurred relative to the birth, not of Jesus, but of the birth of John the Baptist, who is the cousin, as it were, of Jesus. A very interesting aspect of the story. I hope you've enjoyed this broadcast. I hope you'll tune in tomorrow to listen to more as we prepare ourselves to look at the story of Mary as related to us in the Gospel of Luke, the story from her own words and her own interviews with Luke. I want to thank you very much for listening. We're going to end with a little bit of our theme song, and then I hope you'll tune in tomorrow to listen to more of the story of Mary. Thank you very much for staying with us, and let's just end with a little bit of our hope, faith, and courage by the Brothers of Faith, downloaded from dmusic.com, dmusic.com. Thank you much, and God bless.
Faithful breeze.